Oh. Can everyone hear me now? Could everyone hear me before? Okay, right. Yeah. I'll go back to the beginning. No? So, these guys are actually relatively difficult to find. Often as well, they will also infect and impersonate a legitimate user on your network, which means that the way that you have to start to try and detect these guys is slightly different. So what kind of tools do we have to beat these? First thing is, of course, you know, these guys who are following the rules, they're simple, easy to find. You know, you can use traditional systems to do this. However, the problem with these guys is that they're getting up to much higher scale. If you look at the recent DynDNS attack took out most of the Eastern US's favorite websites with a distributed denial of service attack from a botnet which was actually running on webcams. So CCTV, you know, IP CCTV. Turns out hardware guys write really bad security software. So they're all hacked. That was getting up to, it's a relatively simple attack. It's not a difficult thing to detect particularly. But that was getting up to traffic rates of a terabit a second hitting the target servers from multiple locations. Now, to be able to detect those kind of things, and in fact the increasing number of attacks that you get from these simple, easy to find people, you really need massive scale. So that's why we're bringing the big data technologies and scale out technologies to be able to address those kind of issues, where the traditional systems just can't hack the size of attacks. Now, for these difficult to find people, life gets a lot more interesting. This is where we're starting to add on the ability to use things like Spark to model historical behavior at very large scale, and some other technologies I'll go into within Metron to be able to create user profiles and entity profiles and start to do anomaly detection against what's coming into your network from multiple different sources so that you can actually find anomalous user behavior and start to uncover these guys who are in this advanced persistent threat category. So we've had the good and the bad, and for those of you who are Clint Eastwood fans will know that the ugly is coming up next. This is what people have going for them at the moment. There's a whole class, really, of tool which is which addresses this, which is the SIM, as they're called. There are a lot of these. They're big enterprise pieces of software. They're very expensive. They tend to be very vendor-specific. They require a lot of integration work. They require a lot of, frankly, cash. The other thing is that they find it very difficult to deal with big data. So a lot of the people I talk to using traditional enterprise SIMs will say, well, we can keep about a month to 2 months of data in our system. And then we have to throw it away onto archive-type systems, and then if we want to search in it, we have to load it in and research it. And every time I try and run a query, even on a couple of months of data, then I have to go and get a cup of coffee, and it's really not doing my caffeine habit any good. So what we're trying to do is ruin the world coffee industry within the security practitioner space by making a lot of this problem go away by applying a lot of big data technologies which allow you to keep more data longer and start to uncover things like those threats that we were talking about which hang around on your network for multiple months. Then got this huge space of all these legacy tools, and these will be web consoles, they'll be GTK applications, they'll be things like specialist tools like Wireshark or huge variety of these packages, which all do slightly different things, and all do, some of them might do GeoIP encoding, some of them might do packet inspection, some of them might do signature detection. All of these things are very useful, but they're also very difficult to use. And if you look at, there's a specific Linux distribution, actually, which incorporates a lot of the kind of what you might call, it's marketed very much as a white hat, penetration testing tool, and it's called Kali Linux. This includes a lot of these tools, and it's a bewildering array of tools all sort of brought together, which really you need to be an absolute expert to use. So there are problems with the legacy tools. There's then this kind of emerging category. So if you talk to all the analysts and to the likes of Gartner, they'll get very excited about this new emerging cool category of what they call UABA, and that stands for User and Entity Behavior Analysis Tools. A lot of these are really starting to do some of the things that we're doing with Metron, which is apply machine learning and apply anomaly detection to the problem of finding the unknown attacks. However, a number of these also exhibit similar problems. So a lot of these, a couple of years ago, there was a huge amount of startup funding in the area of cybersecurity. And that went into dozens of these user behavior analytics startups. So there are a lot of these. They tend not to be massively integrated into the existing systems. They tend to try and do everything. A lot of them simply have very nice websites, but no actual real working software. The other thing is that a lot of them tend to be built on old data. Yeah, they provide proprietary closed source models, which is based on old data sets like the, we've got one from 1999 there. That's actually, there's an annual contest called the KDD Cup, which is a machine learning threat detection contest. Many years ago, that had some very interesting entries and some very interesting winners based on a user behavior data set that they published from a while ago. Most of these things are built on out-of-date data. So what we need to counter that is something which can be continuously rebuilt, continuously remodeled on real live new data. The other thing, and this is really something, we talked about this briefly at the beginning, about the plight of the poor good guy, the guy sat at his console waiting for all these alerts to come in, is that a lot of these end up in reality just adding a whole new array of alerts. So we've already got all our legacy point tools to look at. We've already got our SIM to look at with all its dashboards. And if you look at something like Splunk as a SIM replacement, then we tried to count the number of dashboards available in Splunk a while ago, and we got bored at around about 50-something. Yeah, there are a lot of things that you have to look at. And these tools tend to be just adding another tool to that pile. So I just want to break down a little bit about who we're addressing as the Metron project and look at, in a little more detail, at the good guys and what we can do for them to help with all these problems they have. So our main good guy, our kind of frontline soldier in this fight against cybercrime, is the SOC analyst. He's the guy who's drowning in all these alerts. What we want to do is start to provide a better feed of information to him. We've then got the investigator who usually takes over when the analysts finish. The analysts are usually relatively junior people. They start out, they find an alert, and they kind of go, oh, it's kind of interesting, but... And then an investigator comes and goes, right, okay, I'm on it. I will look at the details of that. Again, handover between those people, giving them the right data, making sure the right data is in front of those people, saves a lot of their time. I'm not going to go into all of these, but I'm also going to talk a little bit about the forensics guy, or gal, the data scientists. This is very much an emerging trend. A lot of people are starting to employ security data scientists or take their data science team and shift them over and apply them to the cybersecurity domain. What these guys are looking for is good, solid tools that are very, very flexible where they can do anything. What they're starting with at the moment is essentially a nice GUI platform and a SIM which does log search. That's not really doing it for the data scientist guys who are used to being able to take Python or R or Spark or those together and apply those to any given problem set and any given data set. So a core part of what we're trying to do with Metron is ensure that all the data that's collected and produced by Metron is very, very consumable for those people, and that, of course, it's on a platform which enables all those people to do work the way they want to work. So I'll talk a little bit about an actual attack that we saw in the wild. Everyone's familiar with the concept of phishing, right? This is a kind of specialist phishing attack that we've seen out there in the wild. Around the service DocuSign. So I'm sure many of you will have come across DocuSign. It's essentially an online signature verification service. So what we had in this attack was, initially, the attacker sent a Very innocuous email, very difficult to find. Just looks like an internal, sensible, random question to someone in a finance department. Yeah, hi, how are you doing? Just got a couple of questions. This kind of warms up into so this is what's called a social phishing attack, by the way. You then sort of builds up this combination of content and starts to say, well, I've got these issues, and eventually what happens is that, yeah, they send our innocent finance analyst a link, and after a little bit of trust has been built up, she clicks on that link. That's when it's essentially game over for the people being attacked. That installs a bunch of malware, steals all her contacts, steals all her credentials, and spams out everybody else to extend the scope of that attack. That attack then multiplies exponentially throughout the organization, and you know, a lot of people are compromised. And eventually, somebody gets a little suspicious, an alert is raised on an external email provider, and a SOC analyst notices it. A couple of days later, after a couple of shift changes and digging through many, many thousands of log lines and seven different systems, this analyst figures out what's happened and starts to be able to mitigate what's going on. So, big problem there. Starts in middle of March. It's nearly the middle of April by the time anyone even picks up a relevant alert for this, and another few days before anyone's able to piece together all that's happened here. Over that time period, you have an infection within your network which could be doing all sorts of things and could be stealing all sorts of data. So, what did the analysts do when they actually found this alert? What triggered their process? Now, this is a horrible kind of mess of a slide, and it's a horrible mess of a process as well. So the first thing they did was essentially receive the alert. So they got an alert from an external provider who detected something odd about an email. So went, ah, great, okay. Right, now that alert's coming with a bunch of IP addresses, so first thing I want to do is try and geocode those IP addresses, see where they come from, see which countries they're in. Then I notice that it's to do with a particular user, so I have to look up that user. I go and find out, who is this user? Who do they work for? Should they be sending this kind of email? Is this relevant content? Where do they live? That sort of thing. I then have to look up in the company's asset management database. I have to look for, what is this machine? This machine that's mentioned in all these log lines. Is it a workstation? Is it a server? What is it? What should it be doing? I then might look at something like a threat intel feed. We've used Sultr as an example there, although they have just actually canceled their open sourceness and are winding down. So we'll very much be using OpenTaxi as a response to that, because we don't like people who stop being open source. They might then search through more logs in the SIM to try and tie all this together. They'll also have to go out to other systems to be able to dig down into deeper logs, for example, things which aren't necessarily entirely exposed in the SIM because they've been aged off or because they just, the SIM just doesn't have the capacity to handle that much data. So the upshot of this is, this poor guy trying to find this phishing attack has gone through seven different systems to be able to find the information he's looking for and to be able to piece together this story. He spent a lot of time putting that story together, and as we noticed earlier, that threat that he detected and the amount of analysis he's had to do means that essentially he's late. A lot of the damage is already done by this point. So how can we solve this with Metron? Come on. So there are several areas of Metron that completely change the way that this process works. First off, the way that we serve data in Metron is as a fully enriched set of data. So when an alert comes through, it's already pre-linked to all the information that you're going to want to go out and look at from other systems. So this is where Metron comes in as an aggregator of all those point tools, where it brings together all of those multiple sources of information into one single view. Now that alone gives you a huge efficiency saving. We then have, in the more forensics piece, when people are doing that kind of digging into long, old historical logs, We provide both Elasticsearch and Solr indexing for that to be able to do rapid search through large amounts of that data, but also things like Spark. So you can use Spark with an Apache Zeppelin notebook, for example, to be able to do that digging. You have very flexible tools to be able to get at that data. You can also, of course, then apply things like NLP techniques within that and machine learning techniques within that to uncover the patterns in that data when you're doing forensic analysis. The other thing is, of course, that we talked about having to go out to those external threat sources and maybe look up, see if someone's published a vulnerability on these IP addresses, or if this is already a known attack, is this a known bad guy? We have to go and look at that in some console somewhere in the old world. But because Metron is fully enriching that and integrating all that data together, we don't have to do that. It's already right there in front of us. All the vulnerabilities associated with those IPs, with that, with those assets, with that user, potentially even, and even an organization risk score for that user. It's all integrated together into a single view. So it saves you a lot of time and efficiency. That's what that says. So that means you find that you can understand that story, understand the full context of that much faster, and also find the alert much faster. So the other piece about this is really to do with the philosophy of the way that we handle these kind of alerts. So we've got our same story about what happened here. And in our old world, we might pick this up from a variety, or we might block this from a variety of systems. You know, we might use email security rules to block the incoming messages. So, this is a spam detector type thing, or, this is a known phishing email signature. But that's a manual rule someone has to have written. That doesn't exist yet. We might use firewall rules to see a stream, to block outbound traffic from the malware, which is phoning back home to a known set of servers, for example. But again, those are sets of servers that we have to know about. They're things we have to program into our firewall as static rules. Similarly, intrusion detection system rules. All these are manual rules that someone has to create. And a lot of mature security operations centers will actually have people whose job is pretty much to full-time just write rules. They call them content creators, usually. So security content creators is actually a full-time job to create all these rules. And they just can't catch everything. So in our new way of thinking, we replace this with a series of different classifiers and enrichers through machine learning models, for instance, which then allow us to be much more dynamic about those rules. So, we might have an email classifier that's based on some NLP work on the content of that email. So we get more sophisticated language-level analysis of that. We look at, instead of writing a firewall rule, we look at the active behavior of every device on the network and find anomalies, find unusual behavior through that means, and alert on that to find these, that would have picked up our malware getting executed and calling back to a control server, for example. That would be detected as unusual traffic and alert much sooner. So we start to bring our investigation point closer to the source of the attack. And then, of course, things like user behavior analytics. We talked about that briefly as being a third-party tool. We believe that it should be integrated into that process. And we believe that bringing those advanced machine learning algorithms into the process of understanding threats will get you much better results and much faster results. And then, of course, there's the fact that we get this advanced alert triage thing. So in Metron, we take a very probabilistic approach to the way in which we handle alerting and results, which gives us the ability to very effectively prioritize those alerts for a SOC analyst. Because the guy looking at the results of all these rules and all these matches on the Splunk dashboard or whatever, that guy is drowning in an average of, they'll maybe get through about 10,000 alerts a day of the 100,000 on average that they receive. That's orders of magnitude, not exact numbers. Sorry about that. So, how did Metron come about? We've seen why we want Metron and some of the things it addresses. How did it actually start or come into being? Metron first started out as a project called OpenSOC. This was a project. It was a joint project that HortonWorks did along with Cisco. It was a Cisco-led project. It was Apache licensed, but not properly Apache open source. And that's important. And we fixed that. So OpenSoC then got some traction, started to be put into production in a number of places, saw some very good results in terms of the efficiency gains and some of the detection pieces. It eventually got into a community edition on top of the big giant appliance thing that Cisco sold. But what happened then was Cisco struggled to really build an open source community outside of the Apache Federation. So we actually took that on and working with a number of other security providers and security companies, we took the OpenSoC base and turned that into a full Apache incubator project. And that's what Metron is. So that's the origin of it. We then re-architected it based on all the lessons learned and eventually got to our first full Apache release, Apache TP release around about March this year. And we are currently voting on a new release, which will be a 0.3 version, which we're hoping will get us a lot closer to leaving the incubator. So that's the sort of background of where Metron came from. What actually is it? So at its base, Metron is really an integration tool between a large number of data sources. And for this, we build on a significant stack of Apache projects. We're using a combination of NiFi and Kafka as essentially our ingest pipeline, which means that we can very easily and effectively grab all of these multiple log sources, everything from your web server logs or your proxy logs, your email server logs. These are very useful cybersecurity sources. Also down to the raw network stream. So the other thing that we do in Metron, because we have the ability to scale the storage, thanks to Hadoop, is that we can collect raw network level data. So a lot of the traditional systems just don't have the scalability and storage to collect that much information. What we do is deep analytics on that. We also do it much faster than most other systems, because we have hardware-accelerated network data collection, data processing on that as well. So then we get to the sort of the Metron piece, which is running on a Hadoop cluster. The majority of Metron runs through Storm, and I'll show you why that is in a bit. But we also use Spark in there for a lot of the machine learning capabilities and the deep data science. We then, off the back of that, take in an investigator UI, which is intended to make the lives of those poor SOC analysts a little bit better. We have various indexing mechanisms. We're working on some case management and workflow engines, but that's to come. We have a lot of the data science tooling, which we've essentially inherited from the Hadoop stack and from notebooks like Zeppelin, for instance. So build this out because I don't like animation. So to just dive a little bit deeper on that, we have a wide variety of input sources and parsers already written. If anyone wants to begin to contribute to Metron, then that is a great place to start. And we're always keen to get parsers for the weird and wonderful network devices that that we don't happen to have seen yet. This then combines with a number of other open source tools that we use to provide intrusion detection and packet inspection, for example. So we use a combination of either a package called Snort or Suricata. For those of you who are in the security area, you probably know about those as intrusion detection systems. Again, open source. We also use Bro, which is a deep packet inspection system. Again, open source. We feed a lot of alerts in from that. The real advantage comes from them being able to integrate those. We also have a kind of fast path for raw network data capture. What then happens is this comes into a Metron, which first off takes care of parsing and normalizing this into a known data model. Now, the data model is quite interesting because it's not prescriptive and it's not heavily dependent on a particular type of data. So a lot of systems are looking to be very prescriptive about data structures, for example. So they will provide a specific structure for DNS, a specific structure for NetFlow data, a specific structure for this, etc. What we're doing is actually going for a principle of being able to extend our data structure very effectively and be very flexible around schema, taking advantage of the fact that everything else we're using is schema and read, to be able to allow the end user to make the decisions about what their data is going to look like, but obviously providing some kind of convention and configuration, some kind of conventions which make sense around common things. So we're trying to make the common easy, but make it much more flexible than other systems so that you can integrate whatever you like with it. We then do a series of steps involving enriching that data. So this is where we bring all that data together, bring in all those sources like your Active Directory information, your user asset inventory, your Apache directory server information, for example. We then apply external threat detection feeds. So all your common vulnerability feeds get tagged in right there with the alert. You don't have to go and look them up separately. An important stage then is this probabilistic alert triage piece. And there we have, throughout all of these steps, we have a DSL which is part of Metron called Stella, which provides us a lot of flexibility, a lot of statistical tools, a lot of anomaly detection tools, which allow us to make intelligent decisions at that stage and then effectively prioritize what ends up in an index or on a screen. We then index into multiple systems. So we index into HDFS for long term. We index into Elasticsearch or Solr for near real-time dashboarding and near real-time search. We also apply that out to Kafka topic if you want. The key here is really that it's integratable with any other system. So you can even, if you really want to, you can automate response to alerts off of the back of that integration. So it's designed to be very, very flexible. The other piece about this is because everybody loves writing storm topologies and restarting them every 5 seconds, is that all of this stuff works without you having to restart anything. So I'll come on to how that works in a moment. We talked about those bits. So how would an event come through this system? We might have an event which consists of multiples of these kind of sources. That will then flow through into a Kafka topic. We then go through the parsing normalization phase. We can add on all that enrichment phase. These could come from, say, an H-based server, or they could come from a SQL type interface or a web service. That really doesn't matter. There are multiple ways of getting these enrichment sources joined in. But that happens at real time. That's actually quite important because the context needs to be provided in real time. Otherwise, it's gone. Without that real-time context, you've lost that information. There's no point going and looking in Active Directory 2 weeks after it's all changed and 2 weeks after the fact. We then come on to the more interesting bits around things like the what we're calling model services or model as a service. This is essentially a way of productionizing machine learning models in any language you care to name or any platform you want. Those run on Yarn. There's then a service discovery mechanism which allows you to apply those in real time. So it's essentially, I don't know if anyone's seen prediction IO or those kind of things, or these kind of model delivery, model productionizing systems. It does a very similar job to that sort of thing. So it allows very rapid productionization of machine learning models. We then store into a variety of locations, including HBase, HDFS, Solr, Elastic, whatever you want. So, talked a little bit about that, a little bit of a deep dive into how we're actually doing this. We rely very heavily on Kafka and then parsing through Storm. So a lot of our topologies work on the basis of everything coming into Kafka. We use, for example, MiFi, Kafka from multiple sources. But you can also feed data directly into Kafka. That's been normalized and parsed with a flexible transformation language. So we have a DSL to be able to transform that data, manage that data as it comes in. And then we get to the enrichment topology. Now, this is that's very small. So let's zoom in on that. This is where it... Oh! Better? Sorry, I do apologize. Right. So this is where it starts to get interesting. This is a part of why we went with Storm as opposed to a different streaming technology. What we have in Storm is a series of This is the enrichment piece we're looking at here. So we're looking at a Metron data object, which might have come from an alert, it might have come from a packet. That then gets split between multiple enrichment bolts. So what we're aiming for here is at the absolute reduction of latency, so we can do a lot of parallel tasks at the same time. So whereas most streaming systems around, things like Spark, for example, will rely heavily on data parallelism and batching up on micro-batching of data to achieve throughput. What we're looking for is absolute minimization of the latency, but at the same time, the ability to do massive numbers of enrichments to the same incoming source. So we split this out. We then have a series of instant enrichment bolts which have the ability to cache within those. We're using Storm's local field grouping for those of you who are experts in Storm to be able to achieve maximum data locality there as, for speed as well. We're also then enriching through from sources like HBase as well to get us very, very fast key value lookup on that, but any other source will do as well from that point of view. Then what we do is we join those together. So that's a timed out join process in Storm. So you can essentially, you're not dependent on all of these enrichments, but you can take as much information as you can get in as much time as you have. We then come onto the threat intel approach, which works again in a very similar way. This is bringing in external threat intel sources, your own internal rule sets around that, which you might write in Vestella DSL, for example, and then indexing out into a multiple series of sources. So that split and join Storm topology is really the key to a lot of how Metron achieves very low latency and very high throughput at the same time. And we've actually benchmarked this processing well over a million messages a second through complex enrichments, through things like geo enrichment, host enrichment, Whois enrichment, through this topology. So we can get very high throughput through this from using that approach of split and then join. So I'm going to demo that. I'm going to show you that now. Let's see. So what we get out at the end, this is a very simplified version of demo. What we're getting out of the end is an index into Elasticsearch. And this demo is actually, Metron will just about run on a laptop. Yeah, there is a quick dev platform you can use which will just about run on a laptop. You generally can't turn everything on at the same time on a laptop because it turns out that running clustered type environments on a single machine isn't usually the best approach. So please bear with me if this thing... the other thing that they don't like is large clustered systems don't like being told to go to sleep when you close the screen. So hopefully this will still be moderately lively for you. But we've got a couple of data sources coming in here. You can see a general overview of this, and again, this is for those of you who are familiar with the Elastic Stack, this is a Kibana interface. We package a bunch of Kibana dashboard configs out of Metron as well, just as essentially a quick way of getting some sort of information out of the indexes. So this is our sort of overview. You can see we've applied the geo enrichments, and of course everyone likes a little bit of eye candy. If I show you what's actually underneath all this, though, then that shows you the effect of how those enrichments have run. So what we have here is a Metron object. So every object in Metron that goes through that pipeline will go through things and sort of pull out certain information from things like the parser. So it's pulled out a protocol from the original log source here. You can see this was the original string that we got from there. So we've parsed that out. And what we've then done is actually this one has not applied any enrichments, so it's not hugely... Oh, no. Yeah, it's not hugely interesting, that one. It's not applied any of the enrichments. So let's find one that is a little bit more interesting. There's a web request. So what we've got here is, again, a completely different data source, but parsed and normalized in the same sort of way. And here we can see that the enrichments applied here, we've applied the geospatial enrichment. So this actually provides an enrichment against the MaxMind GeoIP database. And yeah, we've been able to pull out all those location pieces against this. But this could this could equally be something from an asset database around any of those fields or something from a vulnerability list out of all of those fields. So we've pulled all that together, and we can then pivot and look at that in any way we like. So if I just say that actually I'm interested in everything from Russia, then with any luck, my cluster is still awake. It may not be. Yeah, okay, it's sort of awake. Then I can start to be able to dig down and pivot around on those kind of events and look at those, look at events from multiple sources together and effectively visually correlate those based on what I've enriched things against. So that's the sort of simplest use case of Metron. If we look at, when did I run this? I ran some stuff this morning on this. The other piece that we can look at is, again, you see, you can't always turn everything on at the same time, unfortunately. So I've not got the snort ones there for you. But if I look at some of the pieces that I applied this morning on this, then we've got some snort pieces here. This demonstrates some of the threat triage pieces here. So what we've created here is this threat triage level. Now, what that is that's actually a calculation based on any number of the other fields that I've applied for this. So if I push this through a machine learning model, such as a domain generation detection model or a botnet detection model, then that will kick out something like a confidence number and something like a severity number. What my threat triage level then does is to be able to aggregate all those numbers together, apply any statistical aggregator that I want. So if I want the mean or I want the max or I want the minimum, whichever one I want to go with that for that. And because I have the ability to scale that, I can run large numbers of those models and then get out that essentially a priority for people to look at. So that threat triage step becomes very, very useful and very important from the point of view of being able to combine all of the other things that Metron can do. So it's a very quick look at that piece. So it kind of brings us on to the more advanced pieces, particularly the model service approach that we're taking. So again, we saw that diagram of all the enrichment pieces. One of those enrichment capabilities, or at least or many instances of it, can be applying these models. What we have in Metron now is a series of deployment steps, essentially, a series of management steps around deploying and productionizing models. And the key to that is that we can essentially take anything you can run in Yarn, which basically means anything. So that could be an R model, it could be a Python model, it could be Julia, it could be Scala and Spark, whatever you want, running in Yarn. That then provides a common interface, but also some services related through Zookeeper, which allows you to then do endpoint detection, service discovery, etc., transparently to the application of that model in the Metron enrichment. So I can then actually, I can provide execution of that model. One of the things we're working on is providing more of a monitoring interface around this as well, so you can do things like see for performance of models. One of the things we found is that if you statically build a model then on something like domain data, then it's usually useless within a couple of weeks. So you have to continually retrain these models on new data sources because new attacks are emerging all the time. So the ability to train that at large scale on with something like Spark as well also becomes very useful in that stage. But at that point, you've got the issue of having to try and then productionize that. With a model as a service approach and with the framework that we've built around that, that makes it very easy to just deploy those new versions of models and manage versioning of all those models very easily from a single script line. I also want to share some new stuff. It's very, very new. You can tell how new it is from the state of the slide, right? We've got a couple of very important pieces. There's the profiler, which provides essentially very, very lightweight timeline-based statistics. So what I can do is take any of those fields or any of those values, any of those attributes that I've pulled out of enrichment or parsing or anything that you saw in any of those Metron objects and start to create very, very lightweight timeline windows of that. And then apply statistics against those. The way that we do that is by providing a number of different probabilistic data structures in there. So you can, we've implemented in there bloom filters, t-digests, hyperlog logs as common structures for being able to do very advanced statistics on that. That then gives us a lot of capability around anomaly detection. So something I wanted to highlight, particularly since this is an Apache event, we're actually doing, every end of our community sprints, we do a video demo of what we've recently done. So this week's is going to be on Friday. It's about 7 p.m. UK time. I forget what that is in other pieces, but if you're interested, look on the Metron dev lists for the announce thread on that. And what we do is any of the committers or anyone who's worked on anything in the community in that gets a platform to demonstrate what they've worked on over the course of that sprint. So it's very much like an Agile sprint review. And we then publish those videos up on YouTube, so you can also see those off of the Metron wiki. Those are very interesting for seeing the very latest. This week's is going to be about advanced anomaly detection and some very interesting data science that we've been doing on time series anomaly detection based on the profiler. So do check that out if you've got a moment, if you want to see the absolute latest and greatest. With that, I wanted to mention a few things that we have, a few of the community resources we have around Metron. There's obviously the Metron Apache site. That's your first go-to. We also, we're very keen to get more people contributing to Metron. We use a newbie tag approach in the Jira. So if you want to get started, then any kind of simple issues or issues which will give you a good introduction to the code will be tagged newbie on our Jira. But yeah, please feel free to pick off anything that takes your interest. That's a good way to start. The other piece is the way in which we structure our GitHub. Metron is a very modular system and very extensible. So you'll find that as you dig into the various modules of that, we have quite good documentation and examples and getting started approaches and essentially some mini pre-packed demo scripts in each of the readmes. So we've put a lot of time and effort into those readmes to get people going on those. So that's a very good resource for info on Metron. And with that, thank you very much for listening. And please, we are very keen to get more people involved in the community and to line and to hear more about what you want from Metron and what you're doing with it. So please do keep in touch with us. And thank you.
Any questions?
Hey, so quick question on the deployment. So just at the very basic level, suppose I have an infrastructure that I need to protect and it has nothing to do with big data, I'm not interested in running a Hadoop cluster, it's just a very sort of basic IT infrastructure, right? How do all of the bits and pieces that you've described get deployed? Do I get any help for deploying agents? Who deploys the cluster mechanics for me? Because again, I'm not a imagine I'm not a Hadoop guy. I don't really want to deal with any of that.
So I've got some good news and some bad news for you. Obviously a lot of these capabilities are built around the Hadoop stack. You do need some Hadoop and you need things like a Storm cluster to make this work effectively. That's really designed for things which are operating at that kind of scale. Now, the good news. We've done a lot of work on deployment of Metron. Back in March, it was really very difficult to get going. You needed to know everything about every specific version of Ansible because they change their mind every 5 minutes. To be able to get it running, and it was very, very flaky. So a lot of what we've done since then is simplifying that deployment. So that now works through a technology called Ambari MPACS, which essentially allows you to take an Ambari and install everything on Metron through that just by applying an MPAC, and then you just you can install Metron as just another service on Ambari. Now, that's still, still installing Ambari and installing a Hadoop cluster is not the easiest thing in the world to do. We have a number of partners we use to do that sort of thing, and who can do that as a effectively as a complete package thing for you. But in terms of installing for yourself, to give it a go, what I was showing you there was the QuickDev platform. We, as part of the Apache project, we package a number of deployment mechanisms, which are also deployment scripts, including that QuickDev piece, which uses Vagrant to deploy a single node cluster. You can also deploy into EC2 with that as well. So if you can deploy into cloud, then that's pretty straightforward. And, you know, I mean, you know, we'd be very happy to help you on more complex scenarios. Now, in terms of things like agents, we don't actually, Metron itself doesn't extend into agents. But what, you know, we sort of have the boundary for the Metron project is essentially that Kafka endpoint. What we tend to use for getting data in from endpoints and agents is a combination of Apache NiFi and Apache MiniFi, which is, yeah, Mini NiFi. And that then runs as agents for collecting things like files off of endpoints or, you know, for things that you can't get through a networking type protocol off of an endpoint. So those kind of, yeah, you can deploy those kind of topologies, and then that acts a little bit like you know, your traditional log collector agent type approach. So you can just use something like, I mean, if you've already got log collection infrastructure, then why not use that? You know, so if you're centralizing logs through syslog, then use that. So yeah, for a variety of options, but yeah, it's non-trivial at the moment, I'm afraid. But.
Can you tell us a little bit about the amounts of storage that you need to get a reasonable analysis result?
So how long is a piece of string? The amount of storage, what we tend to advise people on is essentially look at industry standards for length of attack persistence. So yeah, a good amount of storage is essentially enough to store about 8 months of data. The other thing is, of course, that, you know, compared to something like a traditional SIM platform, the storage on this is dirt cheap because it's a Hadoop node. Yeah, it's commodity disk, it's commodity hardware. You're not paying licensing costs on, you know, storage, and you're not needing some kind of crazy SAN type environment to store everything in a system that uses big Oracle databases or something like that, you know, as many of the traditional SIMs do. So the storage becomes a lot cheaper, and that's part of the value of Metron, which means that's part of how you can store things much longer. I can't really give you a kind of number in terabytes, because that very much depends on the network environment and number of sources and things like that. But yeah, generally that's not the major concern, yeah, because storage is cheap. Well, it is when you're on Hadoop. So there was one more question, I think. Do we have time for one more?
Sorry, actually we are out of time. Okay. So please, if you have any question, address Simon after this talk. Let's give him a round of applause.
Thank you everyone.